You're listening to Cannabis Health Radio. Here are your hosts, Ian Jessup and Corey Yelland.
Welcome to another episode of Cannabis Health Radio. I'm Ian Jessup, and Corey Yelland is away today. The word arthritis is a general term that means joint inflammation. It consists of more than 100 different conditions. Today we're going to be talking specifically about rheumatoid arthritis. Rheumatoid arthritis is a chronic inflammatory disorder that can affect more than just your joints. In some people, the condition can also damage a wide variety of body systems, including the skin, eyes, lungs, heart, and blood vessels. Joining us to talk about his journey using cannabis to treat and deal with his rheumatoid arthritis is a friend of mine whom I've known for many, many years, Barry Kennard of Victoria, British Columbia. Barry, it's good to see you again, and you and I have known each other pre-internet. Let's just put it that way.
Early 70s, yeah, in radio, and it's great to be with you today.
Yeah, thanks. Now, tell us about your rheumatoid arthritis and when you first noticed that something was wrong.
Well, it was about 8 years ago. I was at a dinner party with some friends, and we were having a wonderful time, and I got some pain in my hands that I couldn't explain. It was incredibly bad. It was very, very painful.
And you never had that pain before?
No, it came out of the blue. We were having dinner. The pain occurred. It came to me in my hands. It was so bad that I thought my hands were broken. And when you feel that both hands are broken, it's disconcerting. So we went home. I told my wife that I felt that I had a major problem. I didn't know what it was. Went to my doctor the next day. He said, pardon me, it could be arthritis. Sent me to a rheumatologist. The rheumatologist confirmed that it was rheumatoid arthritis. And told me that I had a tough road ahead of me and that I could likely be, I'm 66 now. I was about 57 at the time. Said that in 7 or 8 years, if I don't begin medication right away, I'd probably be in a wheelchair.
Mm. And what did that do for you psychologically?
Well, it was so unexpected that it took me a long time to understand what was going on.
Yeah, you had to process it.
Well, yeah, I'd been really, really healthy. I was fit. I was active. I ran. I walked. I exercised. I did all the things you were supposed to do. And this happened to me, and there was no sign of it in my family. My parents had no indication of arthritis. My brother has no indication of arthritis. So I couldn't believe it. And refused to believe it for a while until such time as I got the testing done at the rheumatology clinic. The rheumatologist said that I do have it. There's no doubt about that. And they suggested that here's the regimen that we would like you to do, and we can help you. And that's sort of what I did.
What is the test for rheumatoid arthritis?
Well, it's a blood test. You know, in layman's terms, which I am, it's a C-reactive
protein. Yeah.
And my understanding is when that protein is elevated, then that's an indicator that you've got inflammation in your system, and typically that would be in the rheumatoid arthritis family. And they specifically said I had that kind of arthritis. There are other kinds. Psoriatic is another. This one was rheumatoid. This one was the one that I thought was most frightening and the one that I had. So that's how we began to process it.
So you went to the rheumatologist. He confirmed you had rheumatoid arthritis. What happened next?
Well, we went home, and I was psychologically damaged by it. My wife was very supportive. She said, we'll fix this. We'll help each other, and I'll help you through it. I listened to the rheumatologist, thought that, gosh, is this how I'm going to end up in 7 or 8 years? At 63 or 64, I'll be confined to a wheelchair. I didn't want that to be the case, so we started the medications. There were several well-known arthritis medications.
Like what?
Well, the one that I most recall is a medication called methotrexate, which is a cancer drug and very effective, I think, for some folks that have cancer. And it was, I was told, the most effective, along with a couple of other drugs that I don't remember. I'm sorry. They will help you, and they'll limit the damage. They won't cure it. There is no cure for rheumatoid arthritis, but they will help slow the progression of the disease. And so we went on methotrexate and was on it for a couple of years, and felt that it was hurting me. And it was making me worse, and it was psychologically damaging me. And again, I don't want to say to anybody that methotrexate isn't great. It probably is for something. It wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. It was bad for me, and the disease wasn't getting any better.
So what did this methotrexate do to you that was so damaging in terms of the way you could function on a daily basis?
Well, I could function just fine. I was psychologically, I thought, damaged by it. I was depressed. It was making me depressed. I don't know much about depression. I certainly know a lot about it now because I have suffered from depression, not necessarily because of this, but I think in conjunction with this drug, it reacted, in my view, as a real negative impact on me psychologically. So I felt that I had to stop taking it.
It's interesting you mentioned depression because I've known you for a number of years. And when you told me your story last summer, even before I was involved in doing this podcast with Corey, you were not a person who I would say was a depressive person. You were very optimistic. And to hear the fact that you got depressed was kind of, it was astounding to me, mm-hmm. because it was the total opposite of who you really are.
Well, it wasn't just depression. It was clinical depression. I was diagnosed with clinical depression. I went to counseling. That's how serious it was. I was so concerned that I was reacting negatively to myself and the people around me and my wife, who's been with me longer than I've known you. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, there's something wrong here. We need to get some help. So I went and saw an incredible psychologist. She helped me. She said, I'm diagnosing you as clinically depressed. And so that was sort of what got me on the road that I'm on now. And being depressed and having arthritis was something I didn't want to kind of have controlling my life. So I thought I should make some changes.
So how long were you on these drugs?
I was on methotrexate for about 3 years, and I've been off methotrexate now for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And the drugs were doing what to you?
Nothing, except depressing me and
doing nothing for your rheumatoid arthritis.
Nothing at all. No, I don't know that I was getting worse. And the argument could be that because of the drugs, I wasn't getting worse. I can't quantify that. I don't know. But what it wasn't doing was making me feel better. It was making me feel much, much worse.
So physically, they weren't working.
No.
Mentally, they were working, but in a very negative fashion.
They were damaging me negatively, psychologically. And that's sort of why I'd stopped taking sort of everything.
So did you go back to your rheumatologist and say, hey, these drugs aren't working for me?
Yep. And with all due respect to the rheumatologist, he said these are the gold standards. These are the medications you need to take. And if you don't, I won't be responsible for what happens. And I said, well, you probably won't be anyway. But I'm going to make a personal decision here. I'm going to try to find another way to improve my health. And I'm going to have to do some research because I wasn't smart enough to understand what I needed to do. And so I started looking at other forms of help. And I didn't know what they were, but I wanted to do some research, and that sort of took me to where I am today.
So when you were doing your research, what led you to try cannabis?
Happenstance. Mm-hmm. I think it was as simple as I was walking by the local Compassion Club in Victoria. At this time, there wasn't the access to cannabis that there is now.
Mm-hmm.
You needed to get medical documentation, and I didn't have that. I went into the Compassion Club, awesome place. They were incredibly helpful. They said, I explained my situation. They said, well, we don't know, but maybe this can help. Get a letter from your doctor, bring it back, and we'll start helping you. And that's sort of what I did.
Now, what did your rheumatologist say to you when you told him that you wanted to try cannabis?
Well, his exact words, as I recall, were that the gold standard is the medication that we've tried and that we've got you on. There's no science that says cannabis or any other medication will help. So I'm not going to support your theory about trying it. And I asked him if he would sign the letter that I needed to receive the cannabis, and he refused to do it. So I had to let him go. You know.
So you fired your rheumatologist.
I fired him, yeah.
Yeah. And so how did you get the letter?
I went to my family doctor, who thankfully was, in my view, receptive to my needs. And he was he said, my job is to help you in any way I can. Barry, I don't know the first thing about marijuana or cannabis, but I'm supportive. If you think it's something that can help you, I'd happily sign your letter. So we talked about it. He did a bit of research on his own. He said, I don't know what it can or can't do. I'm not recommending it, but I'm not going to be a detriment to your journey. So he signed my letter. I took it in, and 7 or 8 years later, here I am.
Boy, you were lucky to find a doctor like that.
I thank him every day.
Yeah.
And he knows that, and I talk to him a lot about it. He helped me with my depression. He suggested I get counseling for depression relative to what I thought the drugs were doing. Might have been other things involved too, but he's been incredible. And the only thing I would say to people who are contemplating doing what I did is get some support. You know, get all the support you can.
When you started taking the cannabis, how do you take it?
I take it in the form of a vaporizer. I don't like smoking. Mm-hmm. Smoking isn't good for my lungs. So I didn't want to do that. So I got a vaporizer, and it heats the herb, and you inhale it like you would anything, but it's vapor as opposed to smoke.
So you don't get the burning.
You don't get any of that. No.
Oh, okay.
No, you don't get it is a vapor. I liken it to, most people can understand what a diffuser might be. Mm-hmm. We have a diffuser in our house, and it kind of has a little diffusing smoke coming out of it.
Yeah.
It's not really smoke. It's just vapor. And that's what the vaporizers do. And that's how I use it. And I've been using it regularly, probably every day, as a sleep and a pain aid for about 8 years. And it's been incredibly helpful.
Do you use it just once a day?
Yep. Yeah, at night, usually at the end of the evening. We have grandkids, and we're very active. And my wife and I are devoted to our grandkids, and we mm-hmm. spend all the time we can with them. So at the end of the day, when we're alone at home and it's 10 or 11 o'clock, I want to go watch the news or read a book. I've got my vaporizer by my bedside. I put the herb in. I vaporize for about 20 minutes. I read, fall asleep. I get a full 7-8 hours of sleep every night. Rarely do I get up. And in the old days, when I was on medication, I'd be up all night long in pain. But now, again, I don't have the pain. I sleep incredibly well. I wake up refreshed. I feel like I'm a new person.
Barry, is there a specific strain of cannabis you use?
No. Again, Ian, I'm not smart enough to understand a lot of the psychology of it. What I do when I go to my local dispensary, mm-hmm. I tell them what my needs are, and thankfully the business of cannabis is growing, and people are trying to understand how they can be helpful as advocates as well. So I say what I need is I need to get something for pain, because I still get some pain in my hands. It isn't gone away, and I need something to allow me to relax and sleep. I don't want to get high. I mean, that's the misconception, that cannabis is a drug that makes you high. And
yeah.
We're all like we were in the 60s, you know, in the park smoking pot. And
speak for yourself.
And,
yeah.
and listening to Led Zeppelin, which I still do, by the way, listen to Led mm-hmm. Zeppelin. But it's not that at all. It doesn't, in my view, make me high. It certainly relaxes me. And it just makes me sleep. And, you know, I heal when I sleep. And that's what I think the benefit has been for me, is that it allows me to rest, and it allows my joints to heal and relax and feel better. And so the next day I get up, I feel great typically, and I'm an advocate. And that's what I want to tell people, you know.
Barry, if your pain on a scale of 1 to 10 was, how would you rate your pain prior to taking cannabis?
Well, I know that people go through much worse pain than I've ever experienced. There are people that are severely ill or have been ill, so mm-hmm. it's all relative. Mm-hmm. In my scale of 10, and I don't like pain, so I'm probably a weak guy in that regard. Mm-hmm. It was a 7 or an 8 out of 10. You know, I'd say, let's say a 10 is when you break your arm. Mm-hmm. That hurts like heck. This pain was close to that.
Okay.
So it was close to that, and it to the point where I was frightened for my health, and I was frightened that I wouldn't be able to take care of myself. And I thought that it was so bad that I was going down a path that I thought was going to leave me infirm or not able to take care of myself. Mm-hmm. That's how it was that painful.
So today, how would you rate your pain?
Less than a one. I wake up in the morning. I've got aches and pains. I'm 66, so I think that's okay. Mm-hmm. I've been pretty active in my life. Again, I wake up with aches and pains. Typically, I shower. I start moving, and 2 or 3 minutes after I'm up and I'm making the coffee, I feel fine. I don't have any pain. Again, I've got a few aches in my ring finger on my left hand. That's still
Tell us that story.
Well, you know, that's where it all started, in my left hand, and then it moved over to my right hand. And the pain that I suffer, I've got to describe to you that it's really relative pain. It's not really pain. It's just a discomfort more than anything. My gauge as to how I'm doing is if I can get my wedding ring on my finger, and right now I can't. There's still some inflammation there, so I'm still working on it. It's a work in progress. Mm-hmm. It's probably never going to go away. But my attitude about it and my philosophy about the use of cannabis is just nonstop, and I'm an incredible supporter of it.
Now, the pain that you had elsewhere in your body, do you have pain in your shoulders, your elbows, your knees?
I had it everywhere.
Everywhere?
Everywhere. I had pain in my toes, in my arches, my heel, my ankles, my knees, my shoulders were the worst. Both my shoulders would be affected by inflammation and pain, severe pain. And again, this is going back a few years. I still remember how bad it was. But again, since for the last 5 or 6 years, I haven't experienced that kind of pain at all. So, but I do remember it well.
I remember that I ran into you and your wife on the street about 2008. And yeah. I think this is probably where it was starting. Mm-hmm. And I didn't say anything to you, but I thought to myself afterwards that you looked like you were in discomfort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. And I was, and people have told me that. I mean, you know, you and I know a lot of the same people, thankfully, and we have friends that we both know, but a lot of people have told me that. And my really close friends, who I see a lot, mm-hmm. were really concerned. And they didn't say much to me, but they certainly talked to my wife, especially relative to the depression that I suffered. And it was severe. And all my friends knew about it. I probably was denying it. You know, depression is a strange thing that it affects people differently, and it affected me in a way that it's hard for me to describe what it made me feel like. And all I know is that I have an enormous amount of respect for people who go through that, and I want to be able to help people if I can as a lay person. So I understand depression, and I understand how it results in other things going wrong in your life. But I'm just so glad that I had the support that I did from my friends and family to get me through it.
Does the depression still impact you at all today?
I would say no. I certainly understand it, and I didn't for a long time. 2 or 3 years, I didn't understand what was happening to me. So I had two things. I had the pain from the disease, and I had the pain from the other disease, which was the depression, which I consider a disease. Mm-hmm. So I had two diseases, both creating pain in a different way. And today I feel that I'm not affected, A, by the arthritis that I was, and I don't think I'm affected by the depression as I was. I feel that I'm kind of on a really good path now.
I have a friend who has I worked with him in the 80s, and he has glaucoma. Mm-hmm. He's blind. Yep. And he has depression, very bad depression. And I'm trying to get him on cannabis oil. He tried the high THC, and because of his depression, it caused problems.
Yep.
But I asked him one day, I said, if you had to choose between being blind with glaucoma or having depression, what would you choose? He said, I'd choose glaucoma. He says, depression is absolutely horrible because you become someone you know you're not.
And you're the only one that knows that.
That's right.
And I understand how he feels, and I'm with him there. I can't imagine someone having to make that decision. But mm-hmm. the depression for me, was really severe, way worse than the difficulty I was having with the arthritis. The depression was much worse. And so do I connect them? Probably. Somehow I do. You know, you look at your life and you think, well, how did I get to this point? You know, because I've been trying to do everything right. Now I've got two things. I've got rheumatoid arthritis and I've got depression. That's something I've done wrong. That was a mistake that I made because it really wasn't anything I did. It was a result of things that had happened to me. And so with support and with help and with counseling, and I'm a huge fan isn't the right word. I'm a huge supporter of, if you need it, get it. Mm-hmm. If you think that you're being bothered by something, you need to talk to someone about it. That's the best thing you can do. And that's what I did. And I was reluctant. I didn't want to go to see a psychologist. I didn't think I needed to, but I did. And I'm glad I did. And it took me a long time to understand that, but it's been tremendous. And so I just feel like I'm the guy that I was when I was a kid again. So
do your friends say to you that they really notice a difference in you physically and mentally? And if they do, what do you tell them you did in order to change?
Well, I'm really honest about it. That's why I'm here talking to you today. Mm-hmm. I want to tell people that my experience was damaging. But it was damaging to the people around me as much as it was to me. My children, I've got three incredible kids. They were all affected by what I was going through. I didn't think we were going to talk about this, but I'm glad we are. This is really important to me. They were really affected by it, specifically my kids. My grandchildren, not so much. They're way too young because I put on a facade in front of them because I didn't want them to be damaged. And my friends were incredible, and that's why they're my friends, because they've supported me. And none of them judged me. None of them abandoned me, but they all talked to me and said, you know, something's not quite right here. You're not the same guy you used to be. And so that really was a wake-up call. And it was a tremendous opportunity for me to understand what other people go through and what I was going through. And now I do understand it. So I think it's terrible that it's referred to as some sort of, or it's still seen as some sort of stigma. Mm-hmm. I think that's really unfortunate. I wish it weren't. I think that as we evolve, and maybe in years, people will understand that it's a disease as opposed to some sort of a problem that you've created for yourself. You know, so it's a tough one.
When they see the difference in you now compared to what you were 8 years ago, and you tell them that you were on cannabis, are they supportive, or do you have some folks in your circle who are somewhat skeptical?
Well, probably skeptical about the effects, maybe, but supportive for sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely supportive. You know, and it's sometimes a hurdle you have to jump over, because you're going to run, if you're contemplating using cannabis, that does have a stigma. Unfortunately, there's no basis for it. You know, I've done tons of research on the benefits of marijuana and the benefits of alcohol. And, you know, I don't think there are any benefits in alcohol. And again, I'm not suggesting you stop drinking, but don't compare the two. They're not comparable. One is a medicine, in my view, mm-hmm. and one is not. And the cannabis, in my view, is a medicine. It doesn't hurt you. You know, be smart when you use it. Be in a quiet place and be at home. And don't treat it as a recreational product, in my opinion. Treat it as a medication.
Well, in the history of human evolution, cannabis has been used as a medicine, with the exception of the last 80 years when it has been stigmatized and demonized to be this terrible narcotic that will drive you crazy. And yet nobody, not one person in the history of human evolution, has died from taking too much cannabis.
Well, they classify in the U.S. and I'm thinking Canada as well. They classify cannabis as a drug that's just as dangerous as heroin, or the many opioid drugs that were prescribed every day. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that I refuse to do, is take those things. You know, I'm not going to name them, but we all know which ones they are. And I just wouldn't be a part of that. Yet we'll promote those things every day, and yet we're somehow not educated enough to understand that there are benefits to marijuana that we have to encourage.
Barry, did you make any dietary or lifestyle changes in addition to taking cannabis?
Yeah, we don't eat grain and we don't eat dairy.
Don't eat grain or dairy?
No.
Okay, explain that.
Well, I think in the milk side of it, we do drink milk, lactose-free milk,
okay,
on occasion. I love coffee. I drink as much as I can. I'm addicted to coffee, probably. So I like to put a little bit of cream in my coffee, so I use lactose-free. But I think dairy affects me just from an intestinal point of view. And then grain, I think grain is just my wife and I decided not to eat grain if we can avoid it. And sometimes you can't, and we're not suggesting that nobody eat grain. We don't eat grain. We don't eat any kind of grain very much.
Because I can recall years ago when you were juicing carrots a lot. Oh, man, you used to drink a lot of carrot juice.
Still do.
Do you really?
Yes, we still do. We still do all, you know, we're experimenters. You know, we like to try things that we've heard work for other people. You've suggested many things to me over the years that you've used, and I've tried them all, and they work or they don't work. And I certainly like to try things. And so we still do juicing, not to the same degree, because there's lots of sugar in carrots. And again, we want to be thin as we get older, and we want to be as fit as we can. But we blend vegetables. We have we have smoothies. We don't eat, again, we don't eliminate grain. We just don't eat it if we're given a choice. So if we go out to dinner, and if the dinner is on your tab, which would be rare, and you're buying us dinner, then we're going to eat grain. So yeah, we just sort of stay away from it. That's about all we do. And I take curcumin. Curcumin is a turmeric derivative. I think it's a great anti-inflammatory. It's a natural product, and I take niacin as well. Niacin, I think, has helped me with inflammation as well.
Niacin, do you take it's a vitamin B, which creates this flushing effect when you take it.
Yeah.
So how much do you take?
I take 500 milligrams a day.
Wow,
that's a lot.
That's a lot.
And you've got to build up to that. If you took 50 milligrams right now and you hadn't taken it, it would react fiercely.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt you. It just makes you really hot and flushes. So I have to build up to that. But I've been taking niacin for probably 15 years.
So what does it do for you?
I don't know. I think it's good for it keeps your bad cholesterol down. I had a cholesterol issue when I was younger and I was heavy. I went through a weight loss program as well many, many years ago. I lost a lot of weight. And niacin, I had high cholesterol. Again, I went in to get the Lipitor. I think they recommend it for cholesterol. I didn't want to take that. My pharmacist suggested niacin, and that's why I use niacin instead of Lipitor. Again, not something else I recommend, but again, I'm not a doctor. So.
No, I mean, looking at you today, you look like you're in better shape today than you were 20 years ago in your 40s.
Well, I appreciate that, and I feel great. You know, I've got four grandkids, and I want to be really old and live a long time to take care of them. And so we'll do what we need to do, and we're just trying to do the best thing we can. And we listen to people. I listen to programs like yours. I try to understand what other people are doing. I'm an advocate. I've offered to volunteer in the cannabis community to tell people that, you know, here's what my experience has been. And I'm a proponent, but it's everybody's unique and individual, so I'm happy to help if I can.
Do your three kids know what you do?
Absolutely. Everybody in my life knows what I do.
Yeah.
Everybody. All my work, my people I work with, those that are interested. I don't promote it because, you know, it's nobody really cares, but all my friends know. They're all incredibly supportive. My children all know. And, you know, my wife is a supporter. She uses cannabis a little tiny bit as a topical. She uses it it's great for, you know, we use it with coconut oil to clean your hair. If you have any eczema on your skin, it's wonderful for that. I think it's just there's so many things that cannabis is good for, and there's so few things that it's not good for, in my view. I think it's a tremendous product, and I think it's a tremendous, of medicine, and I'm sorry that so many people have suffered because of their use of it.
I think we're really in the forefront of a change in public attitudes toward this plant, because that's all it is.
Yep.
It's just a plant. And one of the things that many people don't realize is that you can juice the cannabis plant and you don't get high. In order to get high, you have to have a THC in the plant,
right,
and you have to burn it,
right,
in order to activate the THC.
Yeah.
But I think when Canada legalizes marijuana next spring at some point, and it becomes legal for those individuals who are 18 years of age and older, I think you will really see an explosion in people trying it.
Yeah.
Because the demonization of this particular herb will diminish over the years.
Well, I think that's already happened. I think the government is way behind the curve. I think the community is way ahead of the curve. I think there are lots of people who have for years been using cannabis as a medicine. As you've suggested, it's been used for thousands of years. I totally get that. But more importantly, it's become sort of, I want it to become sort of mainstream so that you don't have to go and spend all your money on an opioid to relieve your pain, or on a painkiller that comes in from the big pharmaceutical companies. I'm not supportive of them at all. I think that's a whole other story. But what I want to say to people is that you should at least explore the opportunities. If you have pain or you have depression, I'm not suggesting that it will work or won't work, but it's certainly worth looking into. And you can get lots of support online. Programs like yours are awesome to talk about it. I think the curve is the community is ahead of the curve. The policymakers are behind the curve.
Yeah, totally agree with you.
Yeah.
Barry, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Enjoy this. It was fun.
Great to see you.
Yeah, good to see you.
Okay, buddy.
That's another edition of Cannabis Health Radio. We'll be back again tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Cannabis Health Radio podcast. Visit our website, cannabishealthradio.com, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter.